From Windber to Port Allegheny, Punxsutawney to Harrisburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, pediatric gender reassignment research at Pennsylvania's state-related university hospitals has come under fire from the Pennsylvania Freedom Caucus. State Representative Don Kiefer of York County is here to explain why. Counties and municipalities across Penn's Woods share in revenue from drilling in the Marcellus Shale region. For a look at this year's numbers, Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report. And prosperity is possible if Congress enacts sensible policies to curb inflation and grow the economy. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to State Representative Don Kiefer in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The deadline for enacting a new Pennsylvania state budget is just days away, and some lawmakers are expressing skepticism that the job will be done on time. Complicating budget talks is a recent Commonwealth Court ruling that held Pennsylvania's public school funding formula is unconstitutional. The legislature must now deal with the issue, but while some are pushing to add hundreds of millions more dollars into an already underperforming education system, others point out the court ruling did note that reform does not need to be, quote, entirely financial, meaning adjustments to the funding formula and the offering of more education options could be the solution. A new state budget must be in place by July 1st. Stay tuned. A bill that would give public school teachers the freedom to wear religious garb and symbols in the classroom unanimously passed the state Senate this week. Sponsored by State Senator Kristen Phillips Hill of York County, the legislation would restore religious freedom to teachers. This is in response to a federal district court ruling that found current state law prohibiting the wearing of such items to be unconstitutional. Pennsylvania is the only state in the nation to have such a law, which was enacted as a result of anti-Catholic sentiment at the turn of the 20th century. The Commonwealth of Virginia has withdrawn from the regional greenhouse gas initiative known as REGI, which is a multi-state compact that essentially imposes a carbon tax on energy producers. The administration of former Governor Tom Wolf embroiled Pennsylvania in REGI, the impact of which has been to force at least one coal-fired power plant to close, resulting in the loss of hundreds of high-paying union jobs. The issue is currently in the courts, as lawmakers argue only they can impose a tax, and the actions of the Wolf administration are unconstitutional. State Senator Eugene Yaw of Lycoming County called upon Governor Josh Shapiro to follow Virginia's lead and remove Pennsylvania from REGI, which, if left in place, will result in significantly higher electric bills for Pennsylvania consumers. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The University of Pittsburgh and Penn State University have become embroiled in a number of controversies, ranging from experimental so-called gender-affirming care to the trampling of free speech rights of conservative organizations. Here to talk about it is State Representative Don Kiefer, who represents the 92nd District in York County. She is chair of the Pennsylvania Freedom Caucus, a group of conservative lawmakers fighting for fiscal responsibility. Don, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. It, of course, is budget time in Harrisburg, and part of that budget review is for lawmakers to take a look at state appropriations to the state-related universities around Pennsylvania, Pitt, Penn State, Temple, and that has been occurring. The Pennsylvania Freedom Caucus is weighing in, particularly on the University of Pittsburgh and Penn State. So, Don, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
As you look at the University of Pittsburgh, Don, and this is an issue that sometimes gets lost in the overall big picture of spending tens of billions of dollars statewide, the University of Pittsburgh is doing some research and taking some actions that are really questionable relative to children and teenagers and their sexual identity. Tell us what's at play here. What have you found and why is it concerning?
So a lot of these medical hospitals, or I would say university-related hospitals, are getting into the field of basically sex changes for kids. Let's call it what it is, right? And they're going as young as 5 years old. So when we discovered that some of them are doing that and that they receive state funding, we dug a little deeper. So specifically, actually in Penn State, we saw on their website their description for gender care and their pediatric endocrinologists, you know, they provide puberty blockers for children as young as five, which got our hackles up. They get a lot of money from the state, and we're supposed to be good stewards of those funds. And so when you're doing this kind of experimental procedures on children, I think we all need to take a step back and say, what are we doing? And are we responsible for this? If we're funding it, right, we're responsible for this. So we reached out and said, what are you doing? Please explain this. We give you state dollars. And these types of procedures on children are outrageous, and waited for them to respond. The response we got from most were that, well, listen, we don't do that with the state dollars. Those are separate entities. So when you're dealing with Pitt, Temple, University of Pennsylvania, their medical facilities are separate. Penn State does fall under that umbrella, but they came in and talked to us and said, well, we have this firewall. We're independently bonded, and, you know, those funds all stay with the university, trying to separate the two. I feel like that kind of goes into the Planned Parenthood issue, right? We give tax dollars to Planned Parenthood, but don't worry, we don't use those tax dollars that you give us to do abortions. We only use our private funding for that. You can't tell me it's not going into the same pot.
We are talking with Don Kiefer. Don is a state representative from the 92nd District. That, of course, is in York County, Pennsylvania. And to the point here, she is chair of the Pennsylvania Freedom Caucus. They have raised concerns over fetal research, over the funding of puberty blockers in small children. But another issue that has arisen at both Pitt and Penn State, and we're going to talk particularly about the University of Pittsburgh here, Don, is the ability of conservative speakers to come onto campus and to speak and not have the university attempt to violate their First Amendment rights. The University of Pittsburgh, particularly egregious with a recent situation. Tell us a little bit about that and what the University of Pittsburgh is attempting to do that is really squelching conservative free speech on campus.
It's definitely a free speech. So these are supposed to be your beacons of free speech, and you're supposed to be able to share thoughts and ideas, right? That's the whole point of these universities. But when you have conservative speakers coming in, like the University of Pitt, they actually had conservative speakers come in, and they're charging more for the security for those speakers to come in than they are for other speakers to come in, more liberal speakers. Not only that, and even promoting them, right? They'll send something out to faculty saying, this is a great one to go to. And they're just putting obstacles in front of conservative speakers. It is cut and dry. It is so transparent that's there. And to the point where it looks almost like it's orchestrated protesting when these individuals come in, conservative individuals come onto campus to speak so they can validate, well, it takes more security for those events because they are literally propagating all kinds of information about it and ginning up the frustration and anger of students. So they're absolutely, it's a way that they are just stifling free speech.
There was a situation recently, Don, where Turning Point and some other conservative organizations were at the University of Pittsburgh, and they were there for a debate, a discussion, which, as you pointed out, is that not what universities are supposed to do on transgendered issues? There was, of course, a left-wing protest because the left-wing protests everything that they don't like, and it got a little bit violent. And now the university is attempting to surcharge the groups, something like $18,000? Isn't that something that you're basically charging the conservative groups for the fact that the left-wing groups can't behave themselves? What do you make of that?
Yeah, right. How do they get, because you can't control, you have no self-control, right? Somebody said to me a long time ago, you control you. You control your feelings. Like somebody doesn't make you do something, you control, right? You control what your actions are. So you bring out, the other side can't handle any kind of an adult conversation. They have a meltdown. They cause the damage. They cause the, confrontation. And then you're going to turn the tables. It's classic. It's classic liberalism, right? You're going to turn the tables and blame the person that's bringing the message, right? That's sitting there just having a civil conversation It's crazy. Up is down and down is up. And when are we going to draw a line in the sand?
What is the issue here with this so-called visitor's code of conduct? I believe at Penn State University trying to implement that?
Yeah, so in October, there was a speaker that came in. I think he was the head of Proud Boys. So he came in onto the campus, and all of a sudden there were these groups that seemed to come out of nowhere. They were not, a lot of them were not local people at all. So it was almost like it was staged, and it elevated. They had security in. It escalated to the point where Penn State canceled the event. And it's interesting because all the articles I was reading on it as I was digging in was talking about this individual, the Proud Boys, was taking pictures, like a selfie of himself in the crowd behind him. And he was responsible for provoking them. Like, he's standing there taking a picture, a selfie of just showing how ill-behaved these individuals are, but it's him provoking them. So it's his fault, laying the narrative there. And so now they're looking at it because they can't handle what's going on. Well, they put together this committee, and they're working on now, apparently from the conversations Senator Christush has had, they said, this committee's almost finished already. So this committee is coming up with a visitor's code of conduct. We're speculating what all is going to be in it, but given the way that it transpired and they put the committee together, it's just, again, another way to backdoor stifling free speech. So speakers will come in, they'll vet you first and see what kind of content you're going to have in your presentation. And then, maybe they can just categorize you as a hate speech, and then they can stifle you that way because you wouldn't comply with their visitor's code of conduct. It was interesting just reading some of the articles around this, because it's, talks about you have to align with our values. What are those values? Because they seem to be all over the place.
And whether or not those values actually reflect the values of most Pennsylvanians, particularly the taxpayers who are helping to pay the bill. And that is the point of this discussion with Don Kiefer, who is chair of the Pennsylvania Freedom Caucus. They're keeping an eye on state dollars flowing into so-called educational institutions like the University of Pittsburgh, Penn State, and how those dollars are being spent. And Don, tell us a bit about the Pennsylvania Freedom Caucus. And these issues, of course, are going to continue to evolve as we are currently in the state budget process. We're going to hear more about this code of conduct going forward. Where can folks go also to learn more about these issues and the Pennsylvania Freedom Caucus?
There's a website. It's the State Freedom Caucus Network. You can contact our executive director through that. But on Twitter, we are at PA Freedom Caucus, and on Facebook, we're at the Pennsylvania Freedom Caucus. So you can follow us both places there. Also on Substack, we're PA Freedom Caucus. You can sign up for newsletters on Substack. It's by invite only in the Pennsylvania House only is where we have it. And we stick on anything that grows government, that actually decreases personal freedoms and liberty, and being good stewards of tax dollars. So if you're increasing spending, that's growing government. When you grow government, you stifle freedoms. And so any bills that are doing that, that's where we really try to draw the line and stick as a block to give us leverage to say, you know what, enough. We're not just fixing bad policy. And not only that, not only are we going to stick as a block and go against some of these terrible policies, but we're not going to be quiet about it either. Whether it's Republican, whether it's Democrat, we're not sitting quiet about this anymore.
State Representative Don Kiefer of the Pennsylvania Freedom Caucus. Don, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lemon.
Tax revenue from the Marcellus Shell industry continues to benefit Pennsylvania counties and municipalities. For a look at the latest numbers, we turn to Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi for an Allegheny Institute report.
Hello, and welcome to the Allegheny Institute report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is the executive director of the Allegheny Institute, Frank Gamrat. Frank, your most recent brief, which is available at our new website, we encourage our listeners to go visit the new look at www.alleghenyinstitute.org, deals with Act 13 of 2012, which created the impact fee for Marcellus Shale drilling. Mm-hmm. Frank, before we get into the details of the act, and they are very complex and you have them very well explained in your brief, can you give our listeners an idea? How many wells are there in Pennsylvania currently, mm-hmm. and how does that compare to 2011? And then could you also tell us how many are in Allegheny County currently, and how does that compare to 2011?
Absolutely. The most recent data available is 2021. As of July 1st, 2022 will be available, but we're ahead of the the curve a little bit on getting this brief out with this data. But in 2021, there were 10,995 eligible wells paying the impact fee across the Commonwealth. When we say eligible wells, they're either horizontal, mostly horizontal, or vertical wells use the fracking method that go down into the Marcellus Shale or the Utica Shale formation. In 2011, there were 4,333 such wells statewide. So you've seen there's just a tremendous jump, 154% in those numbers of wells across the Commonwealth. As you could imagine, Allegheny County being a more urbanized, more populous county, it does not have nearly the number of wells as Washington County or Susquehanna County or Greene County, which are the leaders across the state. In 2021, there were just 160 wells in Allegheny County. In 2011, there were just 9. What makes this important is the impact fee of 2012 set up 2 distributions. When they collect the money for the impact fee, roughly $25 million off the top goes off to state agencies. Those state agencies are in charge of making sure, like PUC, Pennsylvania Utility Commission, Department of Environmental Protection, I think there's something for fire folks to combat the effects of the drilling in the Marcellus Shale or both shale formations. Then after that, it's split into 2 pieces. 60% of the impact fee goes into what's called the Unconventional Gas Well Fund, and that's to be distributed to all counties and municipalities with wells. The basic premise of the impact fee was to put it where it would do the most good, and where these wells are being drilled or spud, we want the money to go there to help those folks out the most. Then 40% of that goes into the Marcellus Shale Legacy Fund, and that goes into counties that don't have wells. So, for example, Lancaster County has 0 eligible wells, yet it receives $500,000. It was like $500,000 in 2021. But its municipalities did not receive anything because they don't have any wells. You look at Allegheny, kind of the 160 wells, and they received about $1 million to be split amongst their municipalities.
How many municipalities in Allegheny County have wells?
Those 160 wells across the county are just split into 7 municipalities. Forward, Fraser, Findlay, Fawn, there's a theme here, Elizabeth, Indiana, and Plum Borough. So there's 130 municipalities in Allegheny County. Only 7 host wells. So that leaves, 123 without. In our sample study, we just looked at 128 because in Allegheny County, we actually have 2 municipalities that straddle other county. McDonald straddles Allegheny County and Washington County. And interestingly enough, because Washington County is one of the top well counties in the state, McDonald gets $300,000 a year from being in Washington County, and then like another $250 or so from being in Allegheny County. So they double dipped. We excluded that municipality as well as Trafford, which straddles Westmoreland County, from the analysis because they're double dipping.
Your brief notes that the distribution to municipalities depends on the trading price of natural gas, the number of wells, and the age of the well. And as you mentioned, all municipalities receive a distribution from the fee, at least in Allegheny County. Mm-hmm. How much revenue did Allegheny County's mm-hmm. municipalities receive in 2021?
Again, in 2021, there was $1,154,000 split by 128 municipalities. When you look at the average is 9,023, but that's sort of skewed by the 7 at the top. For example, Forward had 62 wells in 2021. They ended up bringing in $262,000, whereas Hayesville, which is a little tiny dot in Allegheny County on the map, only gets $25. And Allegheny County continues to add more wells. And of course, in this process, some wells are shut down because they don't produce anymore. But in 2022, this should be even higher than it was for 2021. But we have to wait till July to get those data.
Does Act 13 set out restrictions on how the money can be spent?
Absolutely. There are only so many different areas, 13 exactly, where a municipality can spend the money. And real quick, public infrastructure, stormwater systems, public safety, environmental programs, water preservations, tax reductions, housing, information technology, social services, judicial services, capital reserves, career and tech centers and planning initiatives. While that sounds like a lot, and it is a pretty good menu, in Allegheny County, only seven of those categories were given allocations. The most popular was public infrastructure. In 2021, 46 municipalities put money into public infrastructure. Public safety and emergency preparedness was second at 9, then storm waters, etc. What we find kind of amazing is that 53 municipalities were listed as not reporting how they spent their allocation. We go back a little bit to 2017, and the breakout was very similar. But in that case, only 31 did not report how their money was spent. So when you look forward, what is the implication here? In Allegheny County, the municipalities don't get much. There are actually three municipalities across the Commonwealth that receive over $1 million a year on average from this Marcellus Shale fee. Center Township in Greene County, Auburn Township in Susquehanna, New Milford in Susquehanna, and there's three more that receive over $900,000. So in that case, I could see where having strict guidelines on how the money is spent becoming an issue. But as we noted in our business, you know, money is fungible. If you send $1 million to Smith Municipality, okay, that you're telling them they have to spend it on stormwater. Well, then they take the million they were spending on stormwater and spend it somewhere else. For small amounts, for Hayesville, $25, the paperwork and the stamp probably isn't worth the amount of money that they get. Now, understanding that this fluctuates from year to year because of the factors you had mentioned, the price of the Henry Hub natural gas selling point, the age of the wells, the number of wells, the amount of money that comes in every year does fluctuate, but it's not fluctuating greatly. Hazel's probably going to get at most maybe $50 on a good year, and next year's probably 2022 allocations are going to be really the highest that they've ever been. Maybe the legislature needs to go back and rethink. For smaller amounts, you don't have to worry about reporting it. Just, you know, put it to your best use. And for municipalities that have larger allocations, you know, maybe you need to kind of make sure that they're spending it as the law was intended.
Frank, great stuff as always, and we encourage our listeners to visit our website, www.alleghenyinstitute.org, to read this brief and our archives. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Congress has before it a number of policy changes that would make prosperity possible for all Americans. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania explains on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
This month, Americans for Prosperity launched our Prosperity is Possible campaign, an effort designed to highlight the human impacts of bad government policies while scaling solutions that, if enacted now, would rebuild America and her workforce one town at a time. For decades, Americans thrived, free to pursue prosperity. But today, it seems distant. Washington is sacrificing solutions for sides, and that is a game no one wins. It's time to rewrite the rules, fix what's broken, and pave a new way forward. It's time to unleash what's possible in America, to build a movement for more. This is a campaign and movement dedicated to changing economic policies so all Americans can prosper. In order to do this, sensible economics must exceed government overreach. Solutions that lower inflation, unleash energy abundance, and empower the workforce are the trifecta of ideas that will right-size Washington and turn the page on the same tired solutions we've grown accustomed to. To lower inflation, we must commit to tackling budget reform, to lower wasteful spending, and finally address our debt. We are championing a five-part solution to lower inflation: creating a real budget with an annual budget bill with all spending and revenue, use better budget targets by balancing over the medium term so budget surpluses in good years would offset deficits during recessions and emergencies. We should prevent government shutdowns by passing legislation that would ensure current policies continue while Congress finishes the budget and appropriations process. and fix entitlement programs on the brink of insolvency by creating committees for each major program to help Congress seek consensus on how to solve for solvency. And fifth, the reclamation of emergency powers by Congress to finally end executive branch abuse that bypasses the democratic process of enacting legislation. Now, in order to unleash energy abundance, the Senate must act to pass H.R. 1, the Lower Energy Costs Act. This legislation would roll back regulatory restrictions and taxes, ensure federal lands remain a source for domestic energy, and end the abuse of Clean Water Act permitting, streamline duplicative regulation of natural gas exports, and reject green cronyism. And to create more jobs, we must protect worker freedom and fuel an increasingly flexible workforce. Just this week, another threat to workers was decided by Biden's National Labor Relations Board in The Atlantic. It threatens livelihoods of over 70 million workers by narrowing independent contractor status to benefit organized labor, with Washington bureaucrats pushing workers the union's way. Instead, Congress and the administration should focus on passing Senator Tim Scott's Employee Rights Act, which empowers workers and entrepreneurs in today's economy. The legislation gives workers more rights in the workplace instead of the PRO Act and the Biden administration's aggressive agenda, which imposes unprecedented restrictions on workers and employers' rights, such as functionally eliminating right to work, entrepreneurial franchising and vendor business relationships, and narrows independent contractor opportunities to a gross degree. It is imperative for Washington to act now, as it is increasingly difficult for Americans to make ends meet. 61% say recent price increases have caused financial hardship. That is up from 55% just 6 months ago. 35% of Americans name inflation as their family's top financial problem, the highest recorded in 19 years. We can and we must do better. In the spirit of energy abundance, please take a moment to sign the letter to Senator Casey that demands he encourage his Senate leaders to run the Lower Energy Costs Act. This can be accessed by visiting AmericansForProsperity.org. Americans' inflationary woes can be lifted, and we can realize a movement for more. Join us at prosperityispossible.com. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. Connect with us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP and follow us on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 28 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WNTP-AM and WFIL-AM in Lafayette Hill, WKHB-FM in Irwin, along with WRAK-AM in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.